Like it's just a population that lives with a high inflation rate. So for them, any way to find the most stable value is a good way. So it can be Bitcoin, it can be USD, it can be gold, it can be anything. So their only goal is to save money. So that's why in my article I also talk about USDT, because USDT is an easy way to have dollar on internet that is mostly resistant to censorship and is easier to get than real dollar than dollar banknotes. So yeah, people just search for a way to save currency, and then maybe some of them get into Bitcoin and get to know more about it. But most of them, they just don't really care about what Bitcoin is or how it works or how I can have self-custody. Their first goal is just to save money in the time, to save value in the time. So if Bitcoin can do it, then they will use Bitcoin. If it's the dollar, then they will use the dollar. So yeah, it's not, people are not using Bitcoin. Some of them are using Bitcoin because of all its qualities, but most of them will use Bitcoin just because it's useful.
Marius, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, really great. And you?
Great, just great. Well, I've been really looking forward to this chat. By the way, your article is really amazing. I can see there's a lot of research and, you know, interviews, you know, and retrieving testimonials from all kinds of people. But before I go on a rant here, why don't you just introduce yourself? Like, what's your background? How did you like find into the rabbit hole of Bitcoin? What was the motive or the inspiration for this article? Thanks. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you, and thank you to hey to everybody. How did I came in the rabbit hole? This is a long journey, I think. It's the same for everyone. So firstly, I was interested into trading with the forex market. So forex, the currencies like USD, euro, the Canadian dollar, and all the stuff. And so I got interested in this. I made searches about how it works, and I found out that to make this, to trade, I need to understand how economy works, how currency works. And then by making researches on economy in general and currencies, I fell on Bitcoin. And so I digged a bit more subject, and then I discovered something that was amazing to me. And I decided just to make more searches about it and to learn more about it. And little by little, I came to want to work in this field with Bitcoin. So what I did is creating a website with free documentation on it. The first thing I worked on it was just an overview of what Bitcoin is and how it works. Then I was like, okay, maybe with this, with what I want to do, I could go and get in touch with companies. Maybe I could try to make them adopting Bitcoin, just accepting Bitcoin payments. So I was like, okay, but I need to convince them. So what will I do? Because they don't know about it. They see it as a shady currency. And so what can I do? So I was like, okay, there is several topics I have to talk about so they can know more about it, so they don't have this their wrong ideas about Bitcoin. So I was like, okay, the first subject, I think the most important is Bitcoin and its energy consumption. So I write a first study about this to try to explain how Bitcoin consume energy and why it consume a lot or not a lot and how much and why, even if it's a lot, why it's not a problem, because it can be used in a smart ways to incentivize energy industry and everything. So I tried to dig in this. And then the next subject was about censorship, about how Bitcoin can be used against censorship for governments. And as an Iranian, I was like, okay, I have to write about censorship in Iran and people using Bitcoin in Iran against censorship. And that's where I started to make my searches and to create this study.
Well, very fascinating. So, I went through your article like several times because I had really to digest it. Like towards yourself, like what were like some of the numbers or facts that you came upon? Like what was like most shocking to you, or what most surprising to you?
Well, as a European, I think the most shocking is the inflation rate, because inflation is not something that we feel really in France, in Europe in general, because we have the euro, which is a currency that is mostly stable, even if it lost 40% of its value in 20 years, in 25 years. But it's still more stable than other currencies. And then when you hear about Iran, then you hear directly about inflation, about how the currency works. And yeah, this was the most problematic, the most shocking I found. And then in general, it's more how much people were censored, because I already went in Iran when I was young, but as a kid, we don't really understand how things works. We just understand, we understand like what's happening. We see what's happening, and we are explained why it's happening like that. But we are not enough mature to figure and to understand why it's like that and why it's a problem. And then by growing, then we figure, like, we remember what was happening and why they were doing this, and we understand that it was a problem. And so by doing this search, I was re-going, like, going again in this thing, and remembering everything that happened when I was there, and understanding why it was like that. And it was really also a work, not just writing, but also work with myself and with my memories. So it was really, really good, even just for me.
Let me before because I forgot to mention the article itself, the title of it for people who wanna. I'm gonna put it in the show notes anyway. But the Bitcoin Revolution in Iran by Marius Farhadi Taltsouchi, written on February 4th, 2024, and it's a really deep dive into into the background, the data, the numbers, the usage. Now when you talk to some of the people who are, whom you somehow described as, or who whom you gave, pseudonymous names, one of them actually said, I mean, that was his subjective opinion, but, he said something like, in Iran, you're not allowed to disclose that you have Bitcoin, but almost everybody own some. So, do you have like any more like more objective or factual data on that? Like, I think it's somewhere on in your article at the end of it, right?
Yeah, for the data, it's Iranian media that made some searches and asked questions to over 3,000 Iranians, and they found out that around 25% of Iranians own cryptocurrencies, not only Bitcoin but cryptocurrencies, and most of
So
them
anybody
owns
who sort of,
Bitcoin.
owns, I mean, I know, by the way, from other Iranians that there's a lot of shit coining going on, right? A lot of scams and frauds and Ponzi schemes, and it's a lot of shit coin. So from these 25%, how much do you think, or does any everybody who has sort of all these, whatever crap coins, shit coins, cryptocurrencies, how many do they have? How many or what percentage do is the Does Bitcoin holding make of?
I couldn't tell you. That's the problem in Iran. What statistics exactly, how much people own Bitcoin and how much people use Bitcoin, it's really hard to say, because not many people would talk about it, and if they are asked about it, they won't necessarily says it.
Okay,
But
makes
what the
sense.
statistic says is that, yeah, there is, so I think, yeah, you're showing it, it's 20%, 22% of this 25% who owns Bitcoin.
I see. Yeah, it would make sense. You think that's realistic, or do you think it's overrated, underrated, or I don't know?
So I haven't been in Iran since a while, so I couldn't tell you from my point of view, but from what people told me is that it looks realistic, because 20% of 22, which makes like around 6%, 5% of the population, and it seems quite quite fair, considering that maybe there is some of the people who don't disclose it and don't tell it. So yeah.
What do you think is the act? Okay, you emphasized several times in the article that people, hold or buy Bitcoin for the preservation of purchasing power or as a savings instrument, right? So that's the primary thing. And then I think you elaborated something like on why or how the Iranians do not really do their own research, or they're not curious enough as to make like real usage of it, or like a functional usage of it. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Like
Yeah,
besides the savings
so
tool? Yeah.
just to give a bit of context, Iranian people are in this almost same situation as Venezuelan or people who live all Lebanon. Like it's just a population that lives with a high inflation rate. So for them, any way to find the most stable value is a good way. So it can be Bitcoin, it can be USD, it can be gold, it can be anything. So their only goal is to save money. So that's why in my article I also talk about USDT, because USDT is an easy way to have dollar on internet that is mostly resistant to censorship and is easier to get than real dollar than dollar banknotes. So yeah, people just search for a way to save currency, and then maybe some of them get into Bitcoin and get to know more about it. But most of them, they just don't really care about what Bitcoin is or how it works or how I can have self-custody. Their first goal is just to save money in the time, to save value in the time. So if Bitcoin can do it, then they will use Bitcoin. If it's the dollar, then they will use the dollar. So yeah, it's not, people are not using Bitcoin. Some of them are using Bitcoin because of all its qualities, but most of them will use Bitcoin just because it's useful. And I think it's almost the same in every country. So when we see in Salvador, for example, the adoption that is not going so good, it's because people don't have the need to use Bitcoin. But the day they will have the need, then they will have all the infrastructure to use it. So yeah, basically, it's like everybody, it's really hard to get people, to get someone into Bitcoin. And but because most of the people don't care about Bitcoin, they don't know that they need it. But once they will need it, then they will use it. And that's why I think now we have to create documentation and build tools for them to use it. And so when they are ready, then Bitcoin will be ready for them.
Okay, now, I've heard in some talks or interviews that people from within the industry, who are involved or related to the USDT space, they even say themselves that, eventually stable coins are going to become maybe not obsolete, but because of the centralized nature and because, and you actually elaborated on it in the article, what do you call it? The blocking or the sanctioning, right, of Iranians from USDT. So do you think people in Iran, I mean, differentiate, or is it do they think about like, okay, what if I'm using just as a store of value, would it be USDT or Bitcoin? I mean, do they make the distinction like, okay, this one is centralized, this is, you can block that and sanction that and everything else and exclude me from all services. And Bitcoin is totally like, it's open, decentralized, blah blah blah, network. Do people think about that? Is that a topic?
Well, I think people in Iran are not different as people in Europe or US in general. It's most of the people, when they get into cryptocurrency market, then they think, oh, Ethereum is decentralized or Solana is decentralized, USDT is decentralized. But in reality, it's not. And not a lot of people understand the nuance between centralized, decentralized, centralized, and distributed. So Ethereum, for example, is distributed. USDT is centralized and Bitcoin is decentralized. But this nuance is really hard, because when we get into the market, it's like everything is mixed. So I couldn't tell you how much people exactly understand this nuance, and it shouldn't be a lot. Like in Europe in general, when you go to conference, even to Bitcoin only conference, not a lot of people understand. They're like, oh, Ethereum is centralized, but it's not actually true. It's more distributed, and then other infrastructure are centralized and everything. So it's really hard to get, I think, even for someone who knows about cryptocurrencies in general. So yeah, tell me if I answered your question. I'm not sure.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know the inflation rate in Iran? I mean, is that something like objectively, can you find an objective number? Like what is the true or of actual, I don't know, inflation rate
Well,
debate?
it's hard to say because the official number says around 40%. So it's really high. It's not hyperinflation, but it's high inflation. And it's like in Europe, you know, when government says 4 or 5%, in reality, it's harder because we don't know exactly how they calculate it and do they lie? So it's really hard to say. And in Iran, it's probably the same. For example, with the unemployment rate, we know that, like, it's not we know, it's like people say, Iranians say that government is lying and that in reality, the official, like the real rate is higher than the official one. So it's really hard to say, and we cannot make a more precise number. So it's really hard to determine.
Okay, even if it's okay, but you think it's like average 40%, or could it be like 50 more and more percent even? Because then it would
Maybe.
sort of match the definition of hyperinflation, which is, I mean, it's really, I mean, this is strange for me, but the 50%, I think the definition of hyperinflation or the threshold is sort of at 50% upwards, but who cares? I mean,
Yeah, I couldn't tell exactly. But yeah, I just couldn't tell. We should be there to see exactly how it works. All I know is that people there are quite struggling to just to live normally. I see with my family that is outside of Iran is helping my family inside of Iran because it's really hard to just finish the end of the month and pay all the bills because the money is losing 40% every year. So yeah, at least 40%. So yeah, it's hard to say.
So, I want to talk to you about okay, so I need to have an overview. Like, what is legal or what is criminalized? I mean, it can for example, because in one instance you described people who, or is sort of a standard, like people who are who are have a job and they do like part of it, like one third or something like that, in officially, not not officially. So do these people like also get paid, or could they get paid in Bitcoin, or is that some like is that the case in Iran, that people say, hey, you know what, just pay me one third of it, like non-officially in Bitcoin? Is that what's the situation like with?
Yeah, so it's really hard for the people and even for the companies to face the inflation. So most of them, not most of them, but a lot of them just take like give a part of the salary in a formal way. So they declare, they pay taxes on it. But as the example I've been given by an Iranian is around one third. So one third is given in a formal way. The company will pay taxes on it. The employee will pay taxes on it, and then there is two thirds that will be given in informal way. So,
I
or
see.
it's in cash, or it's in like even the real cash, the real rial. I don't know how to pronounce the
Oh,
Iranian
yeah. Is
currency.
that, yeah?
Yeah, rial, yeah, maybe, yeah, rial.
Was
And
it,
so
was it, wasn't it called Tuman, like to in Shah's times? Like, was it like Tuman,
it's
or was it
Toman,
just?
maybe Toman. So I think Toman is some kind of informal currency that one real is 10 Toman,
Oh, okay.
something like yeah. It's I didn't understand too much this. I didn't use it so much, so I couldn't tell you more about it. But yeah, there is some kind of informal currency there, and maybe I should dig into that and make an extension to this study. And so there is also, so in the informal part, you can ask. I think just see with your employer, with the company with who you work, if you can be paid in dollar or in USDT or in Bitcoin. I think it's up to the company if the company owns some or if the employee owns some. It's hard to say.
Okay, but because of the, I don't know, illegal nature of this, I mean, probably companies would not do that, or, you know, because, you know, as you said, you know, people d don't usually, or it's not allowed to disc or actually you don't disclose your Bitcoin holdings, but still a lot of most people do have some Bitcoin. So I guess I don't know, probably they try to circumvent it in another way, or I mean, how criminalized is it? I mean, is it like, do you get penalized for this, or but
So it's like in Europe, basically, if you pay your employees in informal way, then you will get fined and you will probably have to pay lots of taxes and
okay.
everything. So yeah, but on the Bitcoin part, it's not prohibited to own Bitcoin. Cryptocurrencies are not prohibited. They are allowed, but what's hard to understand is that in Iran, there's a difference between what's allowed by the law and what can be punished. So you can be punished just because you own something, even if it's allowed. And so if you own Bitcoin, if the government knows that you own Bitcoin, then they could think that you do illegal things with this, so they could search for it. So that's why it's better to not disclose that you own Bitcoin or USDT or any cryptocurrencies. And so that's why there is a lot of not yeah, people fear a bit to disclose their information, even if most of the people just don't know how to protect them and are not conscious about this. But yeah, a lot of Bitcoiners are careful about how they share the information, how they show that they own Bitcoin, when they show their faces, their addresses, their holdings in general. It's hard to understand, but the less information you disclose, the better it is. And even if you don't have sanctions right now, maybe in 5 years or in 10 years, maybe they will come back and then they will say, oh, all the people who own Bitcoin for the last 10 years, then will be sanctioned. So yeah, it's hard to say in a country with a government like that.
yeah. I'd love to talk to you about merchant adoption or circular economies, but before that, could you give like an overview? Do you have like an overview or like an update on the Bitcoin mining regulation, or you know what is, you know, legal, illegal? What's the real Bitcoin mining rate? Do you have any numbers or like any updates in Iran?
In general, it's really hard to localize Bitcoin mining because yeah, it would be too long if we dive into it. But in general, even if in the statistics says that there is, I don't know, 20% of Bitcoin mining in this country, then it's highly possible that this number is false. So it's hard to say. But the last number I saw, it was around 3 or 4% of the global mining who was in Iran. Then we should check, of course, the source and how they calculate this. Yeah, but I know that it's allowed. It's not prohibited. There is private companies who make Bitcoin mining. And a few years ago, I think it was after the COVID, they suspended the Bitcoin mining because they were using too much energy and the electricity infrastructure was not made for that. But it's not prohibited now. Now it came back and I guess it's progressing. So yeah,
You
the
said
energy there is really,
yeah,
sorry, the energy there is really cheap. So that
exactly.
for Bitcoin miners is the goal.
I had that number in my head somewhere, something like 3 or 4 or 5%, but it's pretty substantial. I mean, for Iran, I mean, I think, do you think it's substantial for, I mean, you know, compared to the whole, you know, world? It's not bad, right? I mean,
Yeah, it's really good because most of the Bitcoin mining now is or in US or in China, and yeah, there is not a lot of countries. I think like 3% is like top 10 or the top 20 countries in the world, so it's pretty good. Yeah.
And you know, as you know, Iran, I mean, has vast amounts of natural resource. I mean, especially gas and oil. Yeah, but do you have like a perspective, like how it could evolve in the next years, or I don't know, decades? Let's say in the next years, you know, where mining facilities, you know, independently and can go to, you know, any kind of location where there's methane or gas or whatever, I mean, emissions, and just, you know, capture it and use it for Bitcoin mining. Are you, I don't know, do you know anything about that?
It's hard to say because the government is, I see it as there is two contrary ways. There is the government that is really sanctioned, like he put lots of censorship on the markets, on the population and everything. So in this way, it could not be good for Bitcoin, maybe because it could lead to prohibiting Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. But in the other way, I feel like the government is trying to open himself. So we saw recently that they joined the BRICS. Now it's the BRICS Plus. So they joined an alliance with Russia, with Brazil, with China, and everything. So they open themselves in this sense too. And so I think this could be also a way where the Bitcoin mining could come a bit more in Iran, and as they have lots of cheaper energy than. It could be possible that Bitcoin mining will develop more in the country, and most of all, I think that in general, all the countries in the world will see a goal, an incentivize to use Bitcoin mining, even in Europe, even if we are far from it. I think in 20, 30 years, we'll be like, oh, maybe Bitcoin mining is not so bad, so we'll use it, and. So I think Iran will be one of the first country who will do that, of course. I hope at least.
Yeah, now there's a huge potential. I mean, not, you know, I mean, I'm not making a big secret out of it, and you probably, you know, I mean, I'm not a fan of this theocratic Islamic regime, but I mean, anything that has been evolved in the last 40 years technologically in Iran or scientifically, I mean, it's amazing, to be honest with you. I mean, it's in the last 40 years on every sector, even medical technologies or nuclear technologies, plasma technology, defense technologies. I mean, it's because thanks to the people, to the really amazingly intelligent and wise and open-minded people. And I think it was Khamenei, you know, who said in one of his speeches, he said, you know, I mean, whatever one thinks about this, you know, this oppressive regime, but it is wise to say, I think he said in one of his speeches to all the, you know, the scientists, I think it was a huge gathering, and he said, you know, it's time that not, so I'm paraphrasing it somehow, and he said, it's time that we stop like copying other people's technologies and books. And we create our own books and our own technologies, and other people, you know, other nations copy us. So I think he opened up like a total new realm, you know, of scientific, technological breakthrough thinking, developing, testing, you know, like, you know, just be open-minded and question like the narrative, the dogma, the scientific, technological dogma. And I think this is the reason why Iran is not attackable, to be honest with you. I know it goes a little bit off the topic now from Bitcoin, but it is actually, I mean, indirectly connected, because if there's a war, a regional war, I think that Iran has, besides highly advanced conventional weapons and defense technologies, I think they have weapons. And that's the only positive aspect I can see through, you know, that they will disclose it. To, you know, because they know, because, you know, it's like with the Russians, they have like, you know, super advanced technologies which they can, you know, protect themselves. But anyway, I'm just going off on a rant here. But what I was gonna talk to you about is merchant adoption. I mean, do you think that no, for our listeners and viewers, you know, who might be, you know, totally new to this topic, Iran has been under sanctions and embargoes for like, yeah, what is it, 40 years? I don't know, but at least 20 to 25 years or so, 25, 30 years or so. like international, right?
Yeah, the first sentience came around the 80s. I think it's 1979.
Wow.
After the first, yeah, it was. I put it on my study. So yeah, it's 1979. And then since then, almost every 5 years there is a new sanction that comes on Iranian economy that is prohibiting them to just commerce with the world, with the countries around, and the countries around to use to commerce with them. And there is sanctions on weapons, on the banking system. For example, they are not in the SWIFT system. So yeah, every year Europe, the EU and the US took sanctions against them. And so yeah, it becomes, so in a way it's good because of course EU and US see Iran as a threat, but also it's touching a lot the quality life of Iranians. So it's a double sense problem here. And yeah.
Yeah, so it's the people. At the end of the day, it's the people who have been suffering, for so many decades, for 40
Yeah.
years or so. And it's also like sanctioning embargoes on all kinds of products, right? And services and special product like medical like necessities, right? I mean, or whatever. So yeah, it's the people, at the end of the day. And I think there's a way out of this. And I think that Bitcoin is the only rational, logical, ethical, sustainable, and ethical, solution to all this. And a truly free market and non what do you call it? Non-attackable, censorship resistant. All the properties that Bitcoin has that for the first time in human history. It would be interesting, to have also maybe together with you, maybe sometime in the future, like a panel discussion with a Bitcoiner and macroeconomist, explaining like what's the pathway to freedom and prosperity and abundance, as Jeff Booth would say. I would love to have Jeff Booth again, back on my show, to maybe describe a situation or the potential of for Iran or for Iranian people to go on a total a Bitcoin standard or with Safed and Amos, So do you have any like vision or perspective on that, like how could evolve with circle like starting with little like independent like circle economies all over Iran, merchants adopting Bitcoin, people paying with Bitcoin? That would be like the one, I mean, that would be amazing. It would bring so much prosperity and abundance to the people.
Yeah, for sure. It would be really great for Iranian economy and the population in general. But of course, still the problem stays the same, is that if there is still these sanctions from the US and from the EU, it will be still with Bitcoin. So it will be prohibited, but it won't be able to be stopped anyway. So there will still be sanctions. And so it's hard to say, do people will still do it. For example, I don't know, could a German company make something with Iran openly? I don't know, maybe it would be done in an informal way. So it's hard to say how it would be. But for sure, with the rest of the world, with Asia, with the South America, with the African countries and everything, for sure it will open. And yeah, US and EU are not the center of the world. There's other countries everywhere. So for sure, Bitcoin could help because Bitcoin is like digital gold. So it's a store of value that you can send at the other side of the world in a few minutes. So for sure, a few seconds with the Lightning Network. So for sure, it will help. And so I don't know. It's hard to say where it will lead, but for sure, it gives more freedom to people and it opens all the economy. And I hope that this will help Iranians and to free themselves from their government, but also from the international sanctions.
Yeah, I mean, realistically speaking, I mean, you're right. The sanction embargoes will go on. I mean, there is probably no way out of it, especially because, I mean, the EU and, European countries, especially UK, I mean, Austria, I mean, they're all under the, control and pressure of whatever, what do you want to call it, Anglo-American deep state, whatever, military, industrial, financial, central banking complex. But I mean, otherwise, Iran wouldn't have survived somehow. I mean, they always found a way to circumvent these sanctions and embargoes. And now they've got, the best friends, sort of, Russia on the one hand and China on the other hand, and many other, country with the adjacent countries, neighboring countries or other countries. So, products, services, new technologies, new, whatever it is. I mean, they can just get it from, I mean, look at China. I mean, it's unbelievable how far they've come, and they've, developed their own whatever it is. I mean, I'm not a fan of electric vehicles, but you know what I'm saying? Like any, you think of any technologies. I mean, even in Iran itself. I mean, they are. I think, what's the word of it? They're becoming more and more independent, redundant. What's the word of it I'm looking for? But self-sovereign, in their, in their whatever development, technological research, production capacities, so, and
Yeah,
once
because
it's rooted, in Bitcoin, then yeah, you might have, some problems still, but what's the general, like, yeah, view on this?
I lost a bit where I was going.
I'm
But
sorry.
no, it's fine. I lost, I think. I don't know. Can you remind me what you're saying? I
Yeah,
lost a
we're
bit
talking about
myself.
like sanctions and embargoes. Like, I mean, it's still possible, to circumvent all those sanctions and embargoes. That was my point, sort of. I mean, even if Europe, European Union, the United States still, put on more and more pressure and sanctions and embargoes, and it's the people who are suffering. But people, what's the phrase? What's the there's a saying, like, out of necessity, flows the creativity or something like that. Out of when something is really necessary and you're suffering and you're in pain, then you become creative. Like, and I think this is what people in Iran and other, in other countries have achieved. When, especially when you are somehow self-organized and you, become creative and you use all the tools and the potentials that you have with all the brains that you have in your country, you eventually, and with cooperation, of course, I mean, I think they
Yeah, for
complement
sure.
each other. That's why it was my point, yeah.
But yeah, so the thing is, in Iran, there's lots of things that are prohibited, but things that don't really make sense, especially from a European point of view. So, for example, alcohol is prohibited, certain kind of music are prohibited, and still people drink alcohol, they still go in clubs, but everything is just not allowed and it's just prohibited, but they still do it, they still find a way to make it. The probably the places where I saw the most bottles of alcohol in the single place was in Iran, even if it's prohibited there. So yeah, they will for sure find a way to circumvent all this and find a way to be more free and find other allies, like China and Russia, as you said. And so yeah, I hope they will get greater from that, at least for the population, not especially for the government. The more important is the free of the population. And I think if the government or the population use Bitcoin, then for sure in the time it will free them from even the government oppression, because if you cannot touch their people's money, then they can do anything, even if there is laws. So yeah.
What do you think would happen if Iran like adopted this same strategy, or pretty identical strategy of El Salvador, like putting starting to going, not maybe not going on a Bitcoin step, but you know what I'm saying? I mean, putting Bitcoin on their whatever treasury or reserves, and making it at least legal, sort of a complementary legal tender. That I think this is what's missing, and then eventual people will just adopt it and start, and then all these circular economies will just evolve automatically, I think, but and then naturally.
Yeah, I don't think that the adoption of Bitcoin will be different in Iran, because it depends how it's made. If it's made like the government forced the population to use it, then of course it will be fast. But is it good? Like, do we want as Bitcoiners Bitcoin to be forced to people? I mean, people have to use Bitcoin because they need it, because they defined a purpose to use it. It's the same in Salvador. So in Salvador, and I am right now writing about this. I made an interview also of a French guy who lived a few months in Salvador. So he gave me a bit of his feedbacks, and he was saying that if the government would have forced everyone to use Bitcoin, then it would not have worked, because Bitcoin is not meant to be forced. Like, people have to use it from themselves. And if you do this, then it's just like a dictatorship, and people will just reject it, even if it's good for you. If it's forced, then it will be rejected. So I think in Iranian point of view, if there's legal tender or just more open use allowed by the government, it will still, maybe it will ease the adoption, maybe it will be a bit faster, but I don't think it will really make like Iran a Bitcoin country in 2 years. It will be something that will take time. But on the other end, what will happen, I think it's more in Europe or in other countries where we'll see like, where people will talk like, oh, you see, Bitcoin is the criminal currency even more because you see Iranians are using it. So I think by doing that, Bitcoiners will not gain from it, at least in the short term, but in the long term, maybe. But in the Iranian point of view, I think it would be good to be at least a free to live a free usage of Bitcoin and being able to use Bitcoin. So it would be nice for them, but I don't know if it's the best. I think we can just like leave it, and it will take time anyway. Bitcoin is already winning, so.
Exactly. So we're way back, yeah. Point of no return. Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, Marius, I mean, it was amazing. I think we should have definitely a panel discussion with you and Zia, and I think a couple of other Iranians. They'd love to have a talk with you, but it was just short term, right now. But because I asked them actually, if I, then I would have asked you, if it's okay with you if they could join. But like, what's your like personal like from this moment? Like, I mean, you already said that, and some of the points you made is crystal clear to me. But how fast do you think is the rate of will the rate of adoption like globally or in specific countries? I mean, is there anything like you want to like emphasize or highlight a little bit, like from I don't know, rate of adoption, how fast it's going to adopt, how I don't know, would it be on a national level, on individual level, on a technological level?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Personally, I like to compare Bitcoin adoption to internet adoption. So we see the growing trend of Bitcoin adoption is matching the internet adoption. So when we compare, 2024 is the equivalent to 2000, I think, in internet adoption. So 2000, the mail were just here. People were just starting using mail. They were the first social medias, and even I think it's a bit like a few years after that there were MSN and all this kind of thing. Twitter came in 2007, I think. The first iPhone came in 2009. Even now, still now, people don't, not everybody uses Bitcoin, uses internet, sorry. So it will take a few years until people will rely only on internet. So yeah, I think if we are now at the equivalent of 20 of 2000, then I think in 2050 maybe we'll have a Bitcoinized world and people will be able to use it freely. But it also depends on how government will accept it. If they accept it as just using it as a store value to back their currency and allowing people to use it freely, then it will go, I think, faster. But if they start to try to prohibit it or to force its adoption, as I said, I think it will get a bit slower. But in any time, in 30, 50 years, I think Bitcoin will be everywhere, and even people will use it without knowing that they use it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty long-term perspective you have. I mean, I would have even said it would be, I mean, I don't know, because of the, holistically speaking, like because of the conditions we have right now globally, would it be geopolitically of financial, monetarily, I mean, everything you can think. I mean, we as humanity, I mean, as civilization, human civilization, we don't have much time, to be honest with you. I think it's, I mean, it will just naturally, I think it would evolve much, much faster than we can even imagine. Much, much faster than the internet, even, which it does. I mean, if the, right now, after 15 years of since the genesis or, the birth of Bitcoin, right? I mean, it's amazing, right? Would it be, the market capitalization or the number of users or the, the national, minority, but I think it will. They're just, I think there's something missing, some kind of tipping point, critical mass, and now one can think about the all this, ETF hype. I'm not a huge fan of this whole institution, but it does give, it makes it a little more, it just gives it a little bit more catapultic push, like whether it be mainstream adoption or mainstream news or the normalization, of Bitcoin. It's like, you talk about it or the price number go up, but eventually we won't think in fiat anymore. Hopefully in the next few years, we're just going to think in purchasing power. And that's, I think, which is, I think, beyond even the average imagination or comprehension. The purchasing power will go exponentially up by orders of magnitude. And I think this is what's missing, the tipping point, and then it eventually will go even faster than an S curvature.
Yeah, I like your point of view, and I wish it would be like that, but unfortunately I don't think it would be like that, because I don't think that government will just abandon their currency, their fiat currencies. I think people, like government, will still keep it and try to make it living. And so I think we'll have, in the near future, I don't know, 20 years or 50 years, like I said, we'll have Bitcoin and national currencies, or regional currencies like the euro. Or I vote, of course, Bitcoin is, for me, is the best, and we could use it almost everywhere. But I think that a better future is a future with several currencies. So with Bitcoin as base, and then several currencies on top of it, because there will still be some kind of need for inflation, I think. And so I think that we could have this, some kind of layer two of fiat currencies and the base layer with Bitcoin. I think this is something more realistic. But if tomorrow there is a fully Bitcoinized and everybody uses Bitcoinized, and I would vote for it directly and I would go for it. But I just don't think it could happen, at least not in the near future.
I mean, I see. I mean, I might, we could have a more nuanced discussion maybe next time about the layers that you're talking about and the different, like, I know, I think the principle I think you're talking about is like sort of a free market of, right, different currencies. But I think what's important here is the essence, really essence, the seed of the essence of Bitcoin is because it's the hardest, scarcest, absolutely limited money. And that's never been achieved before. And that's why it is, a deflationary money. This is what Jeff Booth is constantly preaching about. It's like, this is why it needs to be rooted, because it's natural. Deflation is natural. And we've been brainwashing, indoctrinated, like deflation is bad. No, deflation is actually a natural state of things. Prices going down and products, services, technologies exponentially developing and evolving. And people, eventually it's at the service of the humanity. So anyway, I don't want to go into like different rabbit holes right now, but I think it's important. What I'm just saying is that to preserve the essence of the monetary and technological properties of Bitcoin, and
Yeah, I agree, but it's just I don't think that hyper Bitcoinization is possible, even if I would like it. Yeah, that's just my point. But yeah, I agree with you, and also not. It's really nuanced in my mind, so.
No, it was a fascinating discussion. I just hope everything will just evolve before, because the magnetic field of the Earth, it's been decreasing exponentially, like factually speaking. And I think I've been trying to, talk about this because as long as we have information communication systems, Bitcoin is no problem. Is no problem for Bitcoin. But once, the solar flares start and micronova, and it's actually overdue because of the Earth disaster cycles. So it's going to happen in the next few decades and in the next 20 or 30 years. So I hope we will achieve that point where we can at least enjoy the fruits of Bitcoin and human evolution, sort of rooted in Bitcoin. So yeah, where can people
Yeah, I hope
find you,
so.
Marius?
Well, as I kind of used to say, if you just interested in my work, then just on my website, which is adoptblock.com. There's no A in the middle. It's not adopt a block. It's adoptblock.com. And if you want to chat or to talk, to talk with me or to see what I post daily, then on Twitter, I guess. Which is at AAB the dash
Underscore
Marius,
Maurice, yeah.
underscore exactly Marius. And yeah, just if you want to talk or to debate, my DM are opened, and yeah, I'm looking forward to meet people who will have feedbacks from this chat that we had. And if we have another chat, then I would love to with the panel or anything.
Definitely
Just
amazing.
tell me, yeah.
Definitely, I definitely want to suggest again, recommend your article. It's amazing article. It's very
Thank you.
succinct. It's actually you wrote a number of articles, but I didn't have the time to something with orange something. I think you linked it in your
Yeah.
article, but yeah, it's about like energy and Bitcoin mining. So I'll
Yeah,
delve into
orange
that
is the
then.
new green.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Marius, thank
So,
you so much again, and hope yeah we'll get together and. Next, until
yeah.
next time. Okay.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Marius, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.